Welcome to this episode of the Catholic Money Show. I'm very happy to introduce today's guest. He's been in campus ministry for over 25 years. He works with St. Paul's Outreach. He's got a master's from Notre Dame. He is a father to four sons, and he's the host of another Spoke Street podcast, Better Preach. Please welcome to the show, Ryan O'Hara.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's great to be here.
Thank you very much for coming on. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. I think there's a number of things that we can explore today that are going to really help our listeners. And awesome. I know that I know you have a particular call, a fondness for hospitality in your family. And I think that's where I'd like to start today. Just tell us more about that, what that kind of looks like, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, well, it started with, on our wedding day when we make certain promises. My wife and I, Jill, were married about 24 years ago. And one of the questions that, the priest asks, are you open to life, and to welcome children into your life together? And of course, on that day, yes, we said yes, as all, Catholic married couples do in that setting. And and over the next year and a half or so, we found it that it was going to be difficult for us to get pregnant, and discovered through that kind of difficulty that infertility was likely going to be a part of our life going forward, and it was not going to be likely that we'd be able to have kids of our own. And so, kind of based on that openness, that if you will, that promise, we started praying, started asking, Lord, how could we welcome, kids in other ways into our home? And of course, we were thinking about adoption. And so we looked at a number of different things, from international adoptions to private adoptions, but finally to foster care. And that was really where the Lord kind of grabbed our hearts. And we were living in Phoenix, Arizona at the time. We were working in ministry, and there were thousands of kids who were looking for homes, and we were excited to welcome them in. And so over about 2.5 years, 13 kids came through our home through foster care, and four stuck around forever. And those were our sons that we adopted. We went from zero to four in about 2 years. It was wild. we changed thousands and thousands of diapers, and that was kind of the beginning. I don't know if I would have said at the time that there was a charism of hospitality. I didn't even think I had that language. But looking back, I think that has been a gift that God has given us to allow our home to be a place for those who don't have homes. Mm-hmm. And that's where it started.
When you, and certainly I imagine looking back with hindsight's a lot easier here, but True. If you're looking back and trying to, as best you can, remember then, as you're going through this process, as you're trying to figure out, well, okay, how are we going to answer this call to fruitfulness?
Yeah.
And you're looking at all, different ways to do that. When you started coming across foster care, what was it that, if you can't identify it, like the hook that grabbed you at the beginning?
Yeah. One of the ways that we looked at it was there weren't like a ton of people lining up in that line, And one, we thought, well, we feel like our hearts are open to the challenges that are here, and it doesn't seem like there literally wasn't a waiting list. So there was no waiting list. We got licensed and we could start fostering. But the other thing, honestly, because we were missionaries at the time, we were already raising support for our own life. We thought, I don't know, we just can't afford, a private adoption or international adoption. And so we thought, well, our heart is there. There's no line, and the money kind of the money sort of works. But the other piece of it was my wife's parents were foster parents. Mm. And that broke a lot of the misconceptions and stereotypes that I had about, well, just misunderstandings about what foster mm-hmm. care was. I always thought that foster, if you were in foster care, there was something wrong with you as a kid. Mm-hmm. And that was a gross misconception of what the reality is. There was something not working with their home and their you know, their parents or their mom or dad or whoever is taking care of them, that mm-hmm. it was more on the family setting versus obviously the child. And so that was an important kind of shift in my understanding as well. So those things kind of came together that kind of pointed us in that direction. Those were the things that happened. And, you know, we would go on mission trips and things, in fact, you know, to border towns in Mexico. And, you know, my wife, we would visit literal orphanages. And if my wife could have like snuck kids out, like under her coat, that's just kind of the mother's heart that she has. I'm not that kind of, that wasn't quite my vibe. You know, it's like, whoa, okay. No, we can't just take, you know, obviously we can't take kids, but like she would be ready today. Like, hey, could we take a few of these kids back with us? I would not have been ready for that. That was more her vibe, but that didn't happen. But we looked into all sorts of options, and those are some of the reasons we landed on foster care.
This is fantastic. So that you know, or our listeners, we've mentioned it before, but if you haven't heard us talk about it, so our three daughters came to us through adoption, and you mentioned it a little bit. There is definitely a financial component to this call. How did that factor into things? You mentioned a little bit, but as you were discerning, or even today, other things God might be calling you to, how is it that you take into account the financial cost of an ask that God's making of you? Weighing it appropriately, not making it the most important thing. Well, if it's this so much, we can't do it. Yep. Or this is the cheapest way, bada bing. But how do we give it enough weight where it enters into our discernment, but isn't maybe like the number one deciding factor?
Yeah. I think it was a factor in our, mm-hmm. in our discernment, but it wasn't the most important factor. We'd seen God provide for us in many, many different ways. We were living on Providence essentially mm-hmm. through raising support from kind of 2000 until we were licensed in 2005. Mm-hmm. And so we were living, you know, on Providence and on a kind of ministry salary at that. So we saw God's faithfulness in that. But the call was to foster care, not away from more expensive things, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think my sense would be, where's the call? And believing that the provision will follow, you know, and that was the attitude. And we saw God do that on a mission to New Zealand that we took in the summer of 2000 that took a radical, you know, our life took a radical shift there. And then another call to this kind of missionary work that we were doing with college students and young adults in Phoenix, Arizona, also emerged out of that, and God provided. And in this way, God invited us into the foster care piece. And there also was one of the things that happens is that there's a monthly subsidy, mm-hmm. you know, with foster mm-hmm. care. And this is something that might be good to even talk about and acknowledge, and that the county or whoever is kind of managing the foster care system provides a certain monthly subsidy for each child. And so this allowed my wife to stay at home mm-hmm. and in a sense, provide a modest salary for her to give all of her attention to our kids and the many and varied needs that they had. Now they were all kind of birth to four when all of this happened, and mm-hmm. most of them were under, you know, 18 months by the time they were all adopted. So they were young, but it allowed her kind of the flexibility and our family to have the flexibility for me to be working, to mm-hmm. be still having a, again, kind of a modest salary, but she too, and together that ended up being an important kind of gift from God to us to provide for us as well.
Certainly. you mentioned, follow the call. What's God asking of you? Right. And there's been so many times in our lives, it's incredible, very similar situations, right? I mean, we fundraised our salary when we were missionaries with Focus for nine years. And so I understand so much of what you're talking about and the realities that you've experienced. And this, that, yeah, God calls you to certain things. And then if that's what he's calling you to do, he'll make it possible for you to do it.
100%. Right?
When I was this, essentially, you know, felt like know nothing college senior applying to be a missionary, I had no idea how I was going to get anybody to contribute to and support me on this mission. But then they did. When we were asked, when we went down the route, we were answering this call to adoption the first time and understanding, maybe partially at first, where all these costs are and where I still don't quite know where all that money goes, but that there's some, a bunch of money there that's needed and God provided it for us.
Yeah.
And it was a wild ride each and every time.
Yeah.
And in all, in many smaller ways too, God follows up with what he wants you to do, you know? And I've found sometimes that it's that order. It's here, I want you to do this, and then kind of waiting for the, okay, yeah, let's go for it. And then kind of sending what you need your way instead of like, well, here's all this stuff or here's all this money. Now, why don't we do this with it? It doesn't usually, at least in my life, hasn't happened that way. It's the flip where you get asked first and then he figures it out with you.
Yeah. Isn't that hard? You know, I mean, like that, I wish it was not that way. But that wouldn't be trust. That wouldn't be faith. That wouldn't be the nature. Isn't it beautiful? Like God will use everything in our life to impress upon us how faithful he is. Mm. And money is one of the many ways, but one of the primary ways, not every day and every month or every even year of our life. I might say every year of our life. I've seen that. And in many times per, you know, during those years. But that has been one of the main ways that God has impressed his faithfulness to me personally, and to my wife and I, our family, and to our kids. It has been that is one of the enduring testimonies that I would bring to God's faithfulness, is how he has provided for and abundantly provided for us. We're not just eking by in life. You know, we have a savings and we're moving towards retirement and, you know, all of these things. These are real things that are needed. And we're not just eking out this meager existence. I wouldn't also say we're living extravagantly, but we've seen, you know, God's great faithfulness through this whole thing.
Beautiful. Another question here is, right, so we've talked a little bit about some of the financial side of answering this call to hospitality. For a second, I just want to turn, if you will, to the, I guess you'd call it, like, I don't know, maybe the emotional cost of it. Because I know, right, with foster care, right, the plan is, right, the goal always is reunification of getting the kid, helping the, right, well, while they're in your care, you're taking care of them, maybe helping them with anything they need help with. the family is getting some help. Hopefully, the goal is to bring them back together for a happy life together. So
that's right.
You end up, at least, I don't have the experience, so I'm guessing.
Yeah.
You end up caring for this kid. You probably get close to them, right? You start to love them. And then, I mean, but it's in its, maybe it's best case scenario, temporary, right? You're going to get to know this kid, maybe just enough to really care for them so that you miss them more when they go. But in the end, that was the point. Like, can you just speak into that?
Yeah, that's very real. That's exactly right, Jonathan, that the goal is reunification. And the only way to care for any child is to love them like they're your own. I mean, that there's no other proper way. And especially kids who have experienced homes that maybe aren't always loving and that they haven't always felt cared for. And those kids are harder or more difficult to love because of the great resistance they put to kind of the love and affection and care that is necessary. And so the whole thing is fraught with difficulty, and yet the call persists to love them as though they were your own, with a willingness to be hurt, and a knowledge that this is gonna, you know, it's like that Tommy Boy line, this is gonna leave a mark. I really dated myself there, but like it's gonna hurt, and it does hurt. And you have to love in such a way to be willing to be hurt, because if you hold anything back, they sense that.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's almost what they're baiting you into doing, because of all the trauma-related attachment challenges that kids come into foster care with. That's why they're in foster care. There's a traumatic experience of some type in their background. So it is fraught with difficulty, but there's no other way to do it. And you have to count that cost. You'll count the cost one way or the other, either before or during. I mean, there is always a cost. It was interesting as we were talking about like the cost of adoption. You may have experienced both. We didn't have the financial cost. That just wasn't present. But there's always an emotional cost to adoption for both, for the parents and the kids and the birth parents. So that has to be taken into consideration.
Yeah. As you experience this, as this has been part of your life, what has that revealed to you about your role as a father, as our call to be men, about our Heavenly Father? Like, what's a fruit that's come of that?
Yeah. Well, I've discovered, the line that I don't know, the line that's always been hard for me is that people will kind of congratulate us, you know. Gosh, you guys are doing such a great thing. It's so good for those kids. And that's always rubbed me a little bit wrong, you know?
Yeah.
On Father's Day some years back, things were going nuts at the table. Like, and it was just like, I just had this sense of like, of all the days you have to be throwing like a gallon of milk across the table. Could it just not be Father's Day, you know? And just exasperated, I sort of stormed off like a little petulant child and stormed out of the room. And I went in the room and just weeped. Was just so heartbroken for how difficult it was. And I even had this sense of like, Lord, I almost feel, the word regret kind of came to mind. And then the Lord put this word gift on my mind at the time. I was like, yeah, I know. We're an incredible gift to them. Where would they be without us? All that, that whole line. And the Lord said, no, you're not the gift to them. They are my gift to you. And that really changed me, where I realized that there was healing, there was restoration of my own experience of fatherlessness. There were things I was going to learn from them that nothing else in life would have provided. There was growth and transformation that would only come through this experience. And it was, in fact, his incredible love for both the kids and for me that this was, yeah, I hope we've been a gift to our kids. I sure do hope so. Mm-hmm. But I know more than anything, they have been God's way of transforming me, putting me in situations I never would have put myself in to choose. And for that, I'm so grateful. They are an incredible gift to me. So I've learned, I grew up without a dad. Our roles were reversed. He had Alzheimer's disease from the time I was five until young adulthood. And that messes things up, you know, when you're a kid, when you're caring for your dad and he's not caring for you. And then, you know, with infertility and then with working with kids who have, you know, attachment issues, it causes a lot of questions about who I am as a man. Do I have what it takes? Will God provide? Am I a dad? What do I do when my teenager calls me by my first name because I am not his dad? I'm his adoptive dad. And so what do you do with all that? And the Lord has just affirmed in me over the years through all these experiences that he is my father, that they are his gift to me, but they also don't define me. The things they do or don't do are ultimately a reflection on their choices, and I can only own my response to them, not, you know, their actions themselves. And so there's been a ton of healing, a ton of transformation that God has worked uniquely, I think, through the experience of foster care and adoption.
Man, that's beautiful. That was so good. And I was struck when you talk about, you know, trying to figure, you know, who am I? What does all this mean for that?
Yeah.
And I think, right, in the it's through this gift of yourself that you've made to everybody. You've come into contact with everyone in your life. That's where we find ourselves.
Yes.
And so this call to hospitality, to care for others around you. How else has that expanded and looked like in your life?
Yeah. Well, in 2018, sort of the height of the Trump years in as president, and the Supreme Court justices were kind of being replaced. Mm-hmm. And this question occurred to me. Are we, as pro-lifers, are we really ready are we ready for the end? We want the end of Roe v. Wade, but are we ready for the end of Roe v. Wade? And my conviction came, and this will answer your question in just one second, but this is how we got into it. The conviction came that if we're ready, if there's less access to abortion, and now that Roe v. Wade is overturned, we're seeing this. There's less access to abortion, which is what we want, which means more. It's not going to stop unplanned pregnancies. It just means that more, and this is what we want, that more crisis pregnancies will come to term. That means more kids will be born into the world. And what do crisis pregnancies often need, or they often become crisis families, and crisis families need the support of foster and adoptive parents. So I intuited, if you will, I'm sure one of many people who intuited this, but I intuited that this is actually a need that we need to ask ourselves. Are we ready to jump in and support families in crisis more? And so I put a video together and I put it out there in October of 2018. And it was like an invitation to pro-lifers everywhere to consider adoption and foster care. And the video is called, Are We Ready for the End of Roe v. Wade? And that was in 2018. And I put that out there, and it got a fair amount of traction in my circles and maybe the next circles of my circles. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people started looking into in my circles, foster care and adoption. It was really beautiful. And I kind of thought, well, this was my kind of my swan song, you know, like my role in all of this isn't to do the foster care and adoption. My role is to put the video out there. You know, I've done all that. And the Lord actually had another thing in mind. In fact, he was calling my wife and I to an even more generous, but a new opening of our home and our life to families and kids in crisis. And it started with a young man in 2019, just before the pandemic, who was homeless in Birmingham, Alabama, and he ended up coming up to the Twin Cities, and he needed a home on the weekends because he was a part of a kind of a Christian boarding school. So to make a long story short, we became his weekend family. And we got to meet this young man from Birmingham, Alabama, and he wasn't exactly homeless, but he didn't have stable housing and wasn't enrolled in school. And so we began learning about his life, about his family, and slowly over time, to make a long story even longer, his sister and his sister's newborn, who was 4 months old, she came to visit about a year later. And they had a return ticket, the two of them. His sister was, you know, 18 years old, and she had a 4-month-old little girl. And they just didn't take their return flight home and just moved in, you know, downstairs. And so the pandemic happened. The school closed down. He moved in full time with us. They were there with us full time. And we've just begun this relationship with this family and many other families who are living kind of right on the edges of poverty. We're getting jobs, getting good education, you know, being able to live sustainably is really, really difficult. And in fact, a year after that, their older brother was shot and killed in kind of, you know, the tough neighborhood in which they're living. And so, like, it's real, the stuff that they're moving away from and getting out of. And so this family, there's, I think there's like 10 of them, including siblings and kind of significant others and their kids, who we've helped to all move up to the Twin Cities and are supporting them in a variety of ways. And that's been the call just with this family. It reminds me of something I heard once. I'll just finish with this, that a Christian pastor named Andy Stanley, you may have heard of him. He shared this principle that when it comes to these kinds of situations, we ought to do for one what we wish we could do for all. And that's kind of been our principle with this family. We want to do for this family what we wish we could do for all families and kind of go all in. And it's come at a cost, but I wouldn't take one penny back. Wouldn't take one penny back. I don't know if my wife needs to hear that. She's the one who is so much easier with spending the pennies. But I would, you know, I need to tell her that today. I wouldn't take one penny back. It's been so important, not just the financial piece, but just opening our home as a place where people can come and be themselves and figure out what the next steps are in life, getting their high school diplomas, starting you know, community college, getting stable housing, stable jobs, getting health insurance, getting driver's licenses, and just beginning to get all the, you know, getting, you know, dental work done that they hadn't been able to do for so many years. Just all of these things, getting to a church situation that they hadn't experienced maybe so much before, and seeing families that reflect a different way of thinking about family. It's been an amazing journey these last 4 years.
Man, that's incredible. That sounds like a wild ride.
Oh,
that you got invited on.
That's a good way to put it. But yeah, it was like I was throwing this idea out there that would people open their hearts and their homes to families and kids in crisis. I think people are willing to give of their time to serve. I think people are willing to give of their money. I think they give money first, then they give some of their time. They might even move into those neighborhoods, if you will, neighborhoods that are a bit more depressed or rough or difficult. But would we be willing to invite them into our neighborhoods and into our homes and kind of put our homes on the line, our lives? And I, when it comes to foster care, let's say, or even this situation, I think in the church, just the Catholic Church, I think the Catholic Church is big enough, strong enough, even healthy enough that there are more happy, healthy, holy Catholic families, just Catholic families in the United States than kids, say, in foster care who need them. So it's just a numbers game, you know, like there is a number, it's a big number, like 400,000 kids in foster care. But I believe there are more than 400,000 happy, healthy, holy families to serve those kids. It's actually, it's a humanitarian crisis. It's a solvable humanitarian crisis. That's a little bit of how I see foster care. And I think in this case, what would it be like if every family sponsored another family in their metro area, and that they went in, maybe not all the way, but they really tried to invest in helping support them through the various challenges that they're experiencing in life. We would see a transformation in the church and perhaps in our neighborhoods and cities as well.
Wow. That's fantastic. As you've gone through this over these last 4 years,
yeah.
How have you seen it through a lens of stewardship? So, yes, your finances, but
yeah,
you know, your time, your family, your home, your food, like all these things. How do you see that through thinking of it as a steward of all these things that you have and that you've shared?
Yeah. Well, part of the context that we live in is a deeply committed community of Catholic families that have kind of linked our lives up together. When you add all the kids together, it's about 800 people, you know, a couple hundred families. So we have a very rich shared life, and we're linked up in small groups. And so at the same time I put this video out, I also saw that we are resource rich and not primarily financially, but yes, financially, but we're resource rich in terms of relationships, in terms of love, in terms of stable family systems, in terms of knowing what rhythms of family life looks like, that from a stewardship angle, I thought this is our greatest mission resource, is our shared life. What if we made a practice of more regularly opening our homes to other people, to the things we already do? I'm not asking you to have two dinners. I'm just asking you to have your dinner. Invite somebody over, you know. I'm not asking you to do anything different. Invite somebody along with you to the things, this beautiful family life that you're living. What if you can invite others into that, what you're already doing? And I think that's been one of the challenges with mission, especially with the, you know, big Catholic families. They're busy. Life is full. So from a stewardship angle, I see us as having the resources that are also in very, very short supply for people who are experiencing poverty. And there's one verse, 2 Corinthians 8:14. I'll just read it here. I don't know if you've ever heard this verse quite like this. I know I hadn't until I got into this. 2 Corinthians 8:14 says, "At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need." And this is implying people who are impoverished. "Your plenty will supply what they need in the same body, so that in turn their plenty will supply what you need." The goal is equality. "As it is written, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little." And so there's this leveling of, there's things that yes, they we may have some things. Here was the shift that had to happen too. There were some things we had, resources, relationships that we might bring to the table. But there's also the experience. It's a two-way street of support. I am learning things about life, about the way the world works, about what it truly means to be poor in the world today that I had no access to, zero. And it is shocking. And I've had to unlearn many things I've believed about people who find themselves in generational sort of poverty being a generational reality for them. Mm-hmm. I had all these misconceptions, all these lies that I believed about them, about their effort, about their grit and their willingness, about their commitment to education and their commitment to sobriety or whatever it might be, you know. Mm-hmm. I had all of these false beliefs until we welcomed folks into our home and we started becoming friends with them. Mm. We built real family-like relationships with them. And they would call us mom and dad, and it was beautiful. And we're now kind of like grandparents to this little girl, Keziah. She's almost 3 years. She'll be 3 years old in April. We've watched her grow up, you know, since she first moved in those few years ago. They've now moved out and they're in a different, you know, a more stable situation. And, and they come over on the weekends and we're serving them. It's beautiful. But that was the verse that really helped me to see, like, we have some stuff, but they have stuff too. And so often we've seen charity, if you will, as this one-way street from us to them. Yeah. No, that's not the vision that the early church had, that there's always something that two parties have to give to one another. And that needed to shift in me too.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. I can't wait to take a little prayer time up at the chapel with that verse, just to see it as it's so just beautiful, right? I mean, it acknowledges the good things that I guess those you're helping have to bring, and it helps us acknowledge the needs that we have, the lack. Yes. That we are suffering, and how in finding each other, we are getting matched up with who needs what in both directions.
Amen. And that first started happening for me as a foster parent. The facade of all these little misbeliefs I had about, you know, people who struggled, you know, with their family, with their career, with money, with whatever. With drugs, or I don't know, that empathy began to build in my heart as we were foster parents, and it's just continued through this process. And as you know, I live in the Twin Cities, and George Floyd happened here in May of 2020, and that was an important moment in our city, and my wife went into those neighborhoods that were ravaged by the destruction and was bringing food because they didn't have access to grocery stores. And I remember my wife brought this beautiful woman to our home, and she didn't want to come inside. And the reason, she had never been inside a home. She'd never been inside a single family home. She'd only ever been in apartments. And she didn't come in. She needed help with her Gmail because she wanted to get her stimulus check. And I'm good at Gmail. And so Jill said, could you come outside and help her sort out her Gmail? I said, gladly, you know. And so, is that Paul George?
Yes, yes. I have an interview with him coming up in a couple minutes.
Dude. Hey, Paul. We're just doing an interview here.
Yeah, we're doing an interview. It's on the same link. I figured we would have been wrapped up before we got started. So yeah. Yeah, we'll see you in a couple.
So I helped her with her email. And she didn't feel worthy to come inside a home. Hmm. I probably should have insisted to come inside my home. You know, I didn't. I didn't know her very well. I didn't know what it would look like to push her in that way. She was elderly, struggled with a long-term drug addiction that she'd kind of had to make peace with. And we were helping her get some, again, dental work done and get to the doctor and trying to help her establish. And this was just someone we met because we were bringing home into these neighborhoods that kind of post George Floyd and all the protests and stuff. Yeah. So it's been a radical shift and transformation in my life. Yeah.
To folks listening or watching this podcast, what can you give them to walk away with, right? To, as they figure out the ways that the Lord is calling them to, right? Not all of us are going to be serving others in all the same ways, but how can they figure out what that call might be?
Mm-hmm. I think it's asking the question about resources and not just think about money. Money certainly is an easy resource we think about, but what resources do we have? Do I have, Lord? Lord, what resources do I have in abundance that I could share with others? Mm-hmm. And to ask, to kind of be creative about that. And I think asking that question in prayer and seeing how the Lord responds. I don't know what it looks like in different people's lives, but I do know that everybody has something. And probably it's the something that doesn't immediately come to mind, but it's something the Lord knows about. And if we're open and willing to ask the question and get quiet, even get quiet for multiple days in a row, for even 5 minutes at a time, and just to journal what comes to mind and what comes to your heart, I think that would be a beautiful practice. And I think husbands and wives should ask that question. What way can we support other families in crisis? Just take that issue. Because not everybody's called to foster care and adoption, of course. Mm-hmm. But every foster family and every adoptive family needs support. And they need all sorts of support, financial and meals and a night out and, you know, all those kinds of things. Yeah. There's so many ways to get involved in this. But I always want to encourage people to get involved in people's lives, not just to go to a food shelter and serve there. That's great. But find ways to connect with real people, even if that means just a willingness to connect with the people that you see who are asking for money on the side of the road, just to look them in the eye and give them the dignity of your attention, is just one way to begin engaging folks who may not have as much as we do.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Catholic Money Show. We mentioned at the top of the show that you have a podcast.
I do.
Better Preach. Tell us about that and how we can learn more about it.
Yeah, Better Preach is a podcast for Catholic leaders on delivering and developing great Catholic talks. Mm. So if you're a priest, volunteer, professional minister of any kind, or somebody who's just wants to grow in giving talks better, this is a podcast that can help folks. And people can find that wherever they get podcasts. It's going to be on YouTube soon, as well. So that's the Better Preach podcast. And then I have a website, ryanohara.org as well.
Wonderful. So check those two out. We'll have links to those in the show notes or the description below. Thank you again, Ryan. I thoroughly enjoyed, speaking with you today. Thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This podcast is part of the Spoke Street Network. For more great podcasts, visit SpokeStreet.com.